Oh boy, it's Friday night. It's the Treasure Coast Fishing Report, and we ain't gonna talk about the government, the water, the problems, the upham. There ain't gonna be a word of negativity out of us.
I love it.
Because it's the spring tide.
Sign
and
me
spring
up.
Tide doesn't mean because it's the springtime. Hmm. Actually, spring tides happen twice a month. Huh. But we have a new moon tonight.
Oh, yeah.
And if you were watching the river like I do every day, the high tide was quite high today and the low tide was quite low.
Hmm.
And the reason they call it spring tide mm-hmm. is because the water springs up.
Right.
And it has to do with, there's another star name for that particular kind of tide. But I caught more fish this week than I've caught in the last 3 months.
Wow.
And I was able to go fishing while my employer was stuck behind the counter. And here's Freddy.
Wow.
Thank you, Dominic. Wow. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in.
Good
evening,
never
Frank.
Know.
You never know.
No,
you never
I know.
Know. I don't know
He's
whether
a cornucopia.
To applaud or just sit here and just wait.
Yeah.
Very nice, Dominic. Thank you. Another beautiful week in South Florida.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say a little bit chillier than we're used to in the beginning of May.
We both have our long sleeves on. Yeah.
Last couple of mornings,
right.
boy.
Right.
Dominic's in jeans here. Mm-hmm. It's quite a different beginning of May than it was last year, for sure. So.
Yeah.
Interesting. Supposed to be temperatures in the 50s tomorrow morning, and then we get back to the mm-hmm. 80 degree and 70 degree lows. So, interesting.
Talk about that wind, though, Freddie, like you were telling them today. You know, the wind is blowing west now, and everything's blowing out, and the Gulf Stream's not
forming.
That
west wind has definitely, you know, if you're a beach angler, you're praising it. If you're an offshore angler, you're thinking about leaving the boat in the driveway. As they say, you know, winds out of the west, stay home and rest if you're an offshore angler. It does just that. Like Dominic was saying, it blows everything offshore. We were so lucky over the last 2.5 weeks or so to have fish in 60, 80 foot of water, you know, and mostly talking the dolphin bite, tuna, sailfish. But what happens is any kind of temperature line or color change or edge or, you know, it's all going to get pushed offshore. It's going to get thrown into the Gulf Stream. Just gets stirred up. And everything tends to move a little bit deeper. So, you know, if you're going out and playing around this weekend, I believe the wind's still going to be northwest tomorrow morning, changing around out of the north as we get to Sunday and then finally back to some easterly winds. But, you know, most people you talk to, it's their favorite. Wind is definitely not out of the west, being an offshore angler. But some fish still out there. It wasn't red hot on fire like it was a week ago, but all good things come to an end, as they say. So we couldn't expect that fishing to hold that steady for that long. But some really good dolphin fishing. We talked about it last week. And this week started to see a little bit more of the blackfin tuna bite start up, some wahoos still here and there, and bottom fishing. Grouper season opened this week. So Sunday was opener of grouper season. Seen some nice fish so far and some really nice mangrove snappers. The bottom fishing has really been kind of in full swing. So if you're chasing grouper, you get up around that 8 mile reef, 6 mile reef, you know, the further north you tend to see more grouper. We always talk to Captain Bill on the Black Dog every week, runs a charter boat out of the Jupiter Inlet, and you say grouper to him and he looks at you and says, what grouper? He says, we don't have any grouper anymore. He said, they're all dead. They've killed all of them, you know, between the fishermen and mostly the divers, you know, water clarity, availability to deep water, it's all there in Jupiter. So you get a very, very big diving crowd. And Bill says, you know, 25, 30 years ago, I didn't know what I was doing. I could catch grouper all day long. Now I know what I'm doing. I can't find one.
You know, I saw a thing on the Facebook from the Florida Fish and Game, and it really made me think about you. The officers were watching this guy with his bag, and then
lobster tails.
Yeah, 28 lobsters, yeah.
Yeah,
and then they said they booked him on a couple of misdemeanors.
Yep.
And I'm not knocking the competition here at all, but on the other station, the sister station, every morning there's a fishing report, and all the guy ever says is, bottom fish remain steady off the reefs and wrecks. And tell him where to go, Freddie, because I know John goes, Justin goes, Zach goes.
A lot of the area that you see guys grouper fishing are further to the north, you know, especially coming out of the St. Lucie Inlet, that 6 mile, 8 mile reef. And I think some people tend to maybe not go deep enough. We always talk about, you know, don't run over the fish to get to fish. But when it comes to the bottom fishing for that real good grouper bite, don't be afraid to drop baits down in 180 feet of water, 160 feet of water, 140 feet of water. I think most people, when they think bottom fishing, they don't really want to use, or they're not prepared to use anything over 8 ounces of lead. But, you know, you do what Pat on the Daymaker and a few others would call power drifting, to where you get a couple shots, which usually that's all it takes if you get it in the right location. But some of the stuff you're fishing 32 ounces of lead with, you know, and you're not fishing, you know, little 112 senators or 113 senators. You're fishing 6-0s. You're fishing 100-pound braid, 80-pound braid, stuff you can bring up the bottom with, because you get a fish down that deep. By the time you realize you're eating, that fish has got to come your way, or he's going underneath the rock and by to you. So it takes a little more finesse. I always say, you know, that Loran Tower area and that stretch to the south is just easier to fish for an amateur angler or a novice angler, because there's such a big span of good bottom in shallow water. Okay. When you start getting over 100 feet of water, you start to have to do a little bit of math. You know, how long is it going to take my bait to get to the bottom? Do I need to be this far away from my actual spot I want my bait to be? Okay. You know, you have to start really taking into account a quicker drift. A lot of times you get out in those deeper numbers and that current's moving faster. You're getting towards the Gulf Stream or in the Gulf Stream in some points. But don't be afraid to look around that 8-mile reef. Everybody, I think, tends to want to cling to the artificial structure because it's so much bigger. You know, the patch reefs of the 6 and 8 mile are not so much, you know, 10 and 12 foot plateaus with big holes. You know, it's a lot of natural worm rock and you know, you get a 5-foot drop off on that reef, and that's big.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think some people don't take into account that little tiny blip you see. It very well may hold a ton of fish. It may only be the size of a Volkswagen Bug, but it's enough rock there that there's 20 fish around it. So I think, you know, take some time. And, you know, there's always usually when you're out there drifting in that deep water, there's somebody on the helm, there's somebody driving the boat. Keep an eye on your bottom reader. If you see something that looks halfway decent, mark it. The worst thing that could happen is there's nothing there and you delete the mark. If you don't mark it, you never find it again.
You know, that's the other part that we always talk about guides, and we don't, it's not commercial that we're talking about. It's not, you know, we provide a service at the Snook Nook. We're guides who we know who produce and are pleasant and easy to get along with. So if you do want to do this, just like Fred said, I know Pat goes out there. I know Jonathan goes out there. I know Justin goes out there. Ed Zach goes out there. You know, there's a bunch of guys that we know, and all their cards are at the Snook Nook. But, you know, my own personal experience with deep water fishing is not in the ocean. It's in the rivers. I used to fish in the Columbia River 120, 140, 150 feet for big sturgeon. And I was really chuckling when Fred said, you got to do some math. Because I have enough trouble with the scope of the anchor line to figure out where the bait's going. And then I'm dealing with something you're not dealing with, is severe current, where I put it down, just say at B, and it winds up at FH or I, and I know that, you know, the fish move around.
That's another good point, too, is I think the mistake a lot of people make is when they're initially, you know, oh, grouper season's open, cool, I see everybody, or, you know, I want to try this bottom fishing, is the first thing they think is that they've got to throw the hook.
Yeah.
They've got to be anchored up. There's just no other way to do it. You can really screw yourself up by throwing the anchor, especially if you're not really, you've never done it before. You think you're in one spot, or you think you're about where you need to be to get to that spot, and you end up 150 yards, and all it takes is 20 yards in the wrong direction, 10 yards in the wrong direction. So do some drifts if you need and a lot of that what will happen is you'll need less lead. People go out there and they, oh man, I need it. I put 2 8-ounce sinkers on my line, and in 90 feet of water, the current was moving so quick. Well, were you anchored up? Yeah, well, that's going to change the game significantly. If you're drifting with your bait, you're not going to need as heavy of a lead most of the time. So I just think, you know, if you're going to do it, just I don't know, do a little bit of research. You can make it easier on yourself because you can go out there plenty of days, and I've done it, you know, go out and just not really know what to do, and you can get very frustrated, and in turn will make you not really want to try it again. But if you want table fare, the mangrove snapper bite has been great. Genuine red snapper are out of season. A ton of them up that way. Everybody says, you know, oh, well, there's a ton of them, and they close them down. Yeah, there may not be as many other places. So a ton of them up there. Keep in mind, that's, you know, when they ask you what kind of snapper you caught, when you say a red one, that's not going to cover it. They're going to want to look at which ones you have and make sure that those red snapper are not the ones in your cooler, because they're 100% out of season. They do give us usually a couple weekends. That's usually to be determined when we get pretty close. But that's another great location. If you know, we get an open season for those red snapper, you get up around that 8 mile, 6 mile mark, you know, and you're fishing in between two inlets. You're a ways out there. So, you know, don't get out there mid morning on a day when you know it's going to storm in the afternoon, because you're not going to have a fun ride back. It's something you need to get out there early and do, and be heading back towards the inlet by noontime. But just a great fishery, and you end up, you know, as well known as the 8 mile reef and the 6 mile reef and all that are, some of the structure outside of it and north of the north end of it just doesn't get a lot of pressure, because it's in between both inlets. Not everybody wants to make that run. So, you know, you can really spend some time, spend a day, even if you're not going to fish it, if you're trolling, and just slow troll around that whole area and just watch your bottom and, you know, just make your marks for the next time and go, all right, that looks like it could hold a few fish. And it may not be the grouper you're looking for, but it may be a great spot to catch those red snapper when they come into season, or a great mangrove spot. John and Justin and the whole crew were out the other day and did not get the grouper they were looking for, but came home with beautiful mangroves up to 6-7 pounds. So, you know, always a good way to bend a rod up there. It may not be the exact fish you're looking for, but just a lot of life up in that area, and a lot of different species to catch, and even big sea bass. You know, had some guys catching some really big sea bass. And then, you know, your lane snapper, they've only got to be 8 inches. I would set yourself a different limit than that going out there. I usually 12. Make sure, yeah. I mean, if that fish isn't 12 inches long, there's not really any point in you keeping it. I understand it's in your right and you paid for a fishing license, but if it's not over 10, 12 inches, you're not going to get a lot of meat out of that fish. Let it go. Let it get a little bit bigger. You know, we talked to Bill on the Black Dog and how long it takes those grouper to grow to the size that they are. I mean, a 20-pound red grouper takes 20 years to get that big.
Yeah.
So, you know, some of your species, you think, all right, you know, you get a just legal fish and cool, man. Well, think about how long it took that fish to get that big.
Do you know that the grouper species, both the gag and the snowy grouper, are right in the top three of the longest-lived saltwater fish on Earth? And here's the funniest part about it. The longest-lived saltwater fish on Earth is the Goliath grouper. Yeah. There's Goliath grouper that lived to be 200 years old.
Yeah. I wouldn't doubt it. They're like, big enough to be at that age.
Like, the largest freshwater fish is a sturgeon. And there's a sturgeon up in Bonneville Dam named Herman who's about 16 feet long, and he goes a little more than 1,000 pounds.
Wow.
And he's been there since 1922.
That's like the fish you see in Grumpy Old Men.
Right.
Going after Herman, you know. I got the John boats ready, rigged up, and they don't catch a darn thing.
Herman has been there since they put Bonneville Dam on the Columbia River, which they put that dam before they put the Grand Coulee. And Herman, they actually brought him a few female companions, and he wasn't interested.
No.
And it's very, there's also ponds up there. And it's, if you ever get up in the Northwest, you have to go to the hatchery and the Bonneville Dam with the fish ladder. But down here, I'm watching this whole different thing. And I know after the break, Freddie's going to talk a little bit about the river, because it's been smoking.
Yeah.
I caught 5 snook yesterday.
Nice.
I did.
Yeah. If you're ever up in the Northwest Oregon region, I recommend summer. It's usually it's on a Wednesday or a Thursday usually. We got to take a quick break, guys. 220-9788. It's WSTU.
we're back. Freddy's here.
Alrighty, guys. Talking a little offshore fishing. Started to see some bait this week, which is a nice change. We haven't really seen too much with bait this winter so far, and we're starting to see some sardines moving up and down some of the shallower wrecks. Only thing quick on that is, you know, when you walk up, you know, at our shop or probably most of your others, and you're going for your live bait rigs, your sabiki rigs, and you see there's three different manufacturers and four different colors and fluorocarbon and non-fluorocarbon, and you're looking at them and go, well, what the heck is the difference, you know? Just in my experience with those sardines, they tend to be a little bit more finicky. They're a great bait, but, you know, when you look at a sabiki rig, you got them in a range from $1.60-something to $5, you know, and people go, ah, oh, well, you know, Barracuda eats that off, that's $5, you know, or Barracuda eats this off, it's $2, what's the big deal? Well, when you look at it as time is money, if you spend $5, think of it, you're never going to save a sabiki rig.
Okay,
once you use
okay.
it, it's you may be able to leave it tied on the rod for the next trip, but that's about it. Otherwise, they're a disposable item. But if it takes you an hour and eight of the cheaper sabiki rigs compared to a half an hour with four of the expensive rigs, you go with the expensive rigs.
Okay.
You know, time is money. You don't, you know, the last thing you want to do is spend half of your day catching bait. You know, the whole deal is to go catch fish with the bait. So to spend 2 hours, and I don't know how many times you hear people, and it may just be the fact that it may not even be the difference of the better fluorocarbon and what you have when people say, well, they look exactly the same. What's the difference between a $4 sabiki rig and a $1.60? Well, every one of them, the attractant is the fish skin, quote
yeah.
unquote, that's
yeah.
on the rig. So you get a cheap Chinese-made rig, it's going to have an artificial cheap fish skin on it. When you get into the higher dollar, nicer rigs, they have actual real fish skin, and the flash is that much more to where those baits jump right on it. But you'll see them come with green beads and red beads. You know, typically, in my experience and a lot of others that I talk to, the sardines tend to go for those reds a little bit more than the greens. But bottom line is have a little bit of a variety. For the next 3-4 months, live baiting is the ticket, generally speaking. We start to see a lot of live bait around. That's what everybody's going for. It's free, quote unquote.
You know,
you're not buying it. You're not buying ballyhoo. You're going out there and catching your own bait. But have a dozen of those sabiki rigs and make sure you got a couple different styles. They come in four different sizes. You know, just have a little bit of an array of them. The other thing I want to talk about is, you know, for the last 4 months or so with the lack of bait, other than the bait guy, pretty much everybody's using ballyhoo.
Uh-huh.
You know, I had a regular listener and customer of ours, Pete, come in the other day, and he said, hey, man, you know, you might mention this on the radio. He listens to us a lot, and he said, I caught a mutton the other day, like 6-7 pounds, nice mutton snapper. He said it had a perfectly coiled double hook ballyhoo rig in its mouth already.
Yeah.
So what that tells you is somebody finished fishing. They only fish for the weekend. They're not going to save their baits, and they just take the rig ballyhoo, cut them out, and throw them over. You know, and figure, yeah, the hooks are going to rust out, but why even if it's not necessary, why do it? You know, and he said, you might just mention people unrig your baits. You know, when you're ready to throw them in the water, you're done for the day, have somebody sit in the back in the cooler with a beer and unrig the baits and throw them in the water. You don't need to throw them hooks and all because you don't feel like untangling them and this and that and the other. And that's just one fish that somebody talked about catching. You can imagine how many are down there with hooks. I mean, that bait hits the bottom. Something is going to eat it. It's not just going to sit there and rot. So, you know, take care of Mother Nature and just, you know, unrig some of your baits. Don't throw your hooks in the water. Don't throw your
mono in the water.
The point
is, Freddie said, like, sabiki rigs are disposable. The ocean's not a disposal.
No.
And that's
in
the part
garbage,
about it, too.
5-gallon like, bucket. You leave a 5-gallon bucket on the boat, that's where the garbage
everything goes in there. And then, you know what? If you brought it with you, take it back. And that's, I'm not being negative, I'm not complaining, but the fact of the matter is, I've hammered this over and over again, if you want to keep this fishery healthy, you have to do your part. And a part of it is no plastic, no beer can tops, no beer bottles, no none of that stuff. Put everything in a bucket. If you took it on the boat, take it back home with you. And it's the same thing Freddie and I have talked about, walking down the beach and finding clam wrappers. And right now, turtle season, plastic, you know, come on. It's a simple equation that we have been given this bounty, and we're supposed to be the shepherds of it. We're supposed to watch out for both the resource and each other. And that's why I even mentioned about the guys with the 28 lobsters. You know, if you see something, say something.
Yep.
And I'm not being, you know, snitches get stitches, blah, blah, blah. The fact of the matter is, they're robbing you. You paid money for your fishing license, and they're robbing you. And the fact of the matter is that they're robbing your children, because the more poachers and the more disobedience of the rules, just like Freddie said, the guy said, gee, I used to know, didn't know what I was doing. Now I know what I'm doing. I can't catch them. Both overfishing, pollution, all that stuff, it makes a big difference. And, you know, what did Smokey the Bear say? What did the other guy say? You're the solution to pollution, because if you didn't throw it there, it didn't wind up there. And I mean, I try myself. You know, I'm going to say something about my buddy Carl. My buddy Carl and Frank go on the Jensen Causeway every morning.
Every morning.
About 3:30 to 4 o'clock. And before they unwrap a rod, or before they even think about cast nets and some bait, the two of them walk that whole bridge and pick up all of the garbage that's been left there.
Yep.
They do that every morning.
Morning. Yeah, they do.
Every morning. You know, and like...
They don't have to.
And they don't have to.
They didn't leave it there.
Yeah. And it's,
but they pick it up.
Yeah, and they pick it up. And they there's four trash cans there. What does it take for you to be standing there and throw something on the floor and think Carl is obligated to come the next morning and pick it up? But I got to be careful here. I said I wasn't going to get negative. I'm not.
Well, it's unfortunate to see such a great, you know, as much as they changed that bridge after the hurricanes and after they redid the drawbridge, and some people say it's not as fisherman friendly. Well, nothing ever is that they redevelop. But it is a great, free, local, accessible, great fishing location. And if it keeps getting trashed and things keep happening down
they're
there...
They're going to shut it down.
They shut it down. They don't... You really... All right, you don't want to pick up your trash? You won't leave any here because you won't come here anymore.
I guarantee you this. If you break up them benches again, they're not going to put new ones in again.
No, why
they're
would not. You? Why yeah. would you? And that's going to take away from everything. Everything that's local that maybe they could have... You know, all right, well, we're going to spend some tax dollars on a new public pier here. They're going to look at it and go, well, we did that at the Jensen Causeway, and they just trashed it. So forget it. We'll spend the money somewhere else.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not just the causeway. It can prevent, you know, it's just clean up after yourself. It's I mean, and I'm sure everybody that most people that we talk to on that are listening do just that. But you can't help but bring it up because you see it every day. So.
Yeah, that's reminds me of the priest that admonishes people about, you know, leaving early. But the folks that are already there, they're not.
They're the ones that need to hear it. Yeah, exactly.
Or the ones that don't come to church.
Yes.
They're about that too.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm already here.
Yeah, they're not going to hear it because they're not listening.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's just, you know, we just have to think about it. You know, with all our issues and our water issues and everything else, you know, something's not going to get done tomorrow, unfortunately. But we can make the time to take care of what we can.
You know, it's like, you know, and nobody's preaching morality here. We're preaching our own resources that are just spectacular. And listen, I've been here now 10 years, and I have gotten to see things. You know, I thought I knew what fishing was about the first time I saw giant tarpon chasing bait up onto the beach. I thought I was going to have a heart attack. The first time I caught giant tarpon in my kayak and got pulled 11 miles, I thought I was going to have a heart attack. And just this week...
So did the tarpon.
No, actually, it was a funny kind of thing, because if that guide boat hadn't have showed up, I'd still be up. I don't know. I'd
probably
way past
up
the power
a certain
lines.
Creek we know of.
Yeah,
probably
and a long paddle back.
Yeah. Right. There wasn't no way I was paddling.
Maybe
after
a
that.
Cuban resident by
yeah.
now. Yeah,
yeah. But yet, you know what? There was a guy who told me about getting pulled out the inlet. He was fishing by the North Bridge, I forget exactly where, but somewhere in Fort Pierce. And he hooked a big tarpon, and that tarpon headed right back for the ocean, and he wasn't able to stop it. You know, and then at a certain point, he just discovered, you know, discretion's the better form of valor, and he cut the line. And then he
Break
said trying to paddle back in against that, you know, outgoing tide was really hard.
Yeah,
but
buddy.
I'm going to go say that I, and Freddie teases me about my top water addiction or my little Cleo spoons, but I sure got into the snook this week. I really did. I had a very interesting experience. It's never happened to me before. I caught a snook, undersized, let him go. I caught another snook, undersized, I let him go.
You usually keep them?
No. But I saw the shadows, and I knew there was some big snook there. So I threw out, and I saw this circle, and I knew what the snook was doing. So I sped up the topwater a little bit, and this thing came up like a Polaris missile. But it it hit the plug, but it didn't take the plug, but it hit the plug so hard, and I'm not exaggerating, the plug came 5 feet out of the water.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, that never happened before. And then when I dropped the plug back down and was bringing it in, another little snook jumped on it. And I just, you know, and now I've been hitting it. In fact, I told Freddie when I was finished with my reels today, I said, I need a couple of days off. And he laughed. He said, oh, a little bit of work, it kills you. No,
he's looking
it's
out the window
time.
Upstairs.
It's kayak time.
I know what it is. We got to take a quick break, guys. We'll be right back. 220-9788. It's WSTU.
I get a quick minute here. I've got to give a little technical advice. I want to talk about, I mentioned this to Freddie earlier today. The advent of braid has been a wonderful thing. It's
you like
I mean,
for your hair?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
Unless you're a little small fishing reel.
Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah, exactly.
Talking about braided line.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Braided line, yeah. The thing is, like, and, you know, Captain Jimmy on the Night Stalker charters, he still uses nothing but 12-pound mono, and I've been with him, and he's caught big fish. But this idea, and see, one of the things about that, the combos that Freddie sets up, you know, there's a reason the rod says 12 to 20 pound. There's a reason that the reel is rated for. When you look on a fishing reel, it'll say 8 pound, 200 yards, 10 pound, 180 yards, 12 pound, 130 yards. It doesn't say anywhere on a 3,000 reel to put 65 pound braid. Oh, but the diameter, it's the same diameter as 10-pound mono. Yeah, right, okay. So, just the other day, I got this reel, and sometimes I showed him to Freddie, because it's hard for me to imagine how every tooth on every gear can just be chunks in the reel when I open it. And then I looked at the spool, and Kyle happened to be upstairs. I says, Kyle, he's a 50-pound braid. And it was a 2,500 battle with 50-pound braid.
Well, I can get 120 yards on there. That's a big deal. And then I'm just going to turn it, just lock the drag all the way down.
Yeah.
You need a bigger fishing reel.
Okay. I knew you'd get to the point
of it. You need a bigger fishing reel. And this is the time of year we see it because, you know, the fish are around. The fishing's good. A lot of people are fishing, and there's bigger fish around. You know, the snook are big. The bigger breeders are moving around. The tarpon start to show up. So everybody thinks, all right, well, I don't really want to buy a new rod and reel, but I got this 4,000. I can squeeze 40-pound braid on this thing, and I'll get a little more muscle. Well, you're not going to get any more muscle than you did with the 20-pound braid because the reel's only made to handle 12-pound tests. So all that braid is going to do is just strip every gear in the reel or break the rod. And, you know, it's also a time of year where we see a lot of broken fishing rods. And, you know, and again, going back to the fact that I doubt anybody that's listening is a habitual rod breaker. But when you talk about a high stick and when somebody comes in and the rod's broken 6 inches or 8 inches or 10 inches from the tip, and it's always a little small blue runner is all I had on the line.
Yeah.
When you pick that rod straight up in the air and it's parallel to your body and the fish is at your feet, and there's all that tension. I don't care if it's a 2-pound fish or a 20-pound fish. The rod is not made to. Everybody's seen the ugly stick commercial where the rod tip comes all the way to the butt section.
Yeah.
There's very few rods other than an ugly stick that can do that. graphite rods, the technology that they use and the sensitivity of those rods and the lightness of it comes with a little bit of an expense. If you use them incorrectly, they will break.
Yeah.
You know, and just in under my experience, everybody's first inclination when they break a rod is to come into the tackle shop angry.
Yeah.
And mad over it and, you know, get a little huffy puffy, you know, and I can tell you that's not the way to do it. Your local tackle shop, our tackle shop, we don't build the rods. We don't knowingly sell them to you thinking that this probably will break, but I'm going to get his money anyway. You know, that's not how it works. If a rod breaks, 90% of the time, maybe more, it's because you did something wrong with it. Shimano is a perfect example. They just changed their warranties on their rods 1 year. Said if it doesn't break within a year of you using it like you should be using it, there's no reason that we should give you any more warranty than that. If it's our defect, if it's on us, and you use this rod for a year without any problem, and you break it 2-3 years down the road, well, guess what? You nicked it on something, you leaned against it at one point, then you got a big fish, and pow, there goes the rod. When you bring it in and it's splintered, and it, you know, it looks like you crunched it in the window, and you tell us what a big fish you had that broke it, you know, I don't know if some people just don't think the guys in the tackle shop fish. We don't use this equipment, but, you know, they come in and they tell you the big story, and then when it finally gets down to, you know, the real deal, I was my garage.
Here's my favorite one. My favorite one of the rods are hanging out the back window of a car. There's 2-ounce egg stingers.
Yeah, right at the tip.
Yeah, mm-hmm. 2-ounce egg stingers, either at the tip or strung along the rod. Every bump you hit, that egg sinker taps the rod. Pop, 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 pop. And like Freddie said, that graphite, and even a glass rod, not as much.
No,
but a graphite,
glass rod. That's the only, you want a rod that you can never break, and you want to work out at the same time, get you a solid glass rod.
Yeah.
It'll never break. It'll weigh 13 pounds.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's the only way you'll get a fishing rod that you can use as a crane when you're catching fish and not have it break. But anything, you know, all these graphite rods, they're hollow rods. They're just, you can't ding them. You know, people always come in and they, man, this I get a new rod? This tip's broken, and it just, you know, well, that's not the manufacturer's fault. You bumped it on something. Yeah, well, I take really good care of my stuff.
Oh, don't get
it
me
only
started.
Takes a little tap. You're talking about a ceramic insert in almost all of these guides that is very easy to break.
I asked Carl the other day, I said, Carl, how did this guide break? And he laughed and he said, the next time that guy comes in, watch what he does. And the same guy came in, had all his rods, took them, picked them up, threw them in the back of the truck. Plonk.
Yep.
You know, and had the rods facing the back of the truck where the gap in the tailgate can easily pick up the rod tip and snap it.
Yeah, if you're going to do that, have a towel with you at all times. You know, Calcutta makes these beautiful things. They're called rod straps.
Yeah.
And they're like $5 for two of them. You put all your rods together. You put the straps around them. They're all bundled as one. And you put a towel right up by the tip where you're going to lean it on the tailgate and wrap it around the bundle and leave it there. Take that 5 extra minutes every time you're done or you're going fishing.
Interesting. And then the other thing is, it's the same thing with Freddie said about the Sabiki rigs. Now, I'm going to bring up an automotive analogy. You know, a Volkswagen will get you the same place a Ferrari will, but you have a whole lot more fun driving a Ferrari. So it's the same thing with fishing rods. I was looking today. I'm in the market for a new conventional rod.
I heard you over there.
No, I am.
But, he was in the $240 St. Croix section.
No.
He was drooling.
No.
You got to sell a lot more.
I had to go
books.
Behind him with a rag and wipe up, you know, right behind him. We got to take a quick break, guys. 220-9788. It's WSTU Friday.
So, Master Freddy, since you're talking about some 50-degree weather in the morning, does that mean you can switch back to getting up a little bit later and wait till that sun warms that water up a little bit, or no, hit
it? If I could sleep in a little bit, I would. Unfortunately, I have to wake up. It's not to go fishing, so it's never as fun to wake up when you're not. When you're going fishing, it's no big deal. You spring right out of bed. Isn't that funny? It's like, all right, I'm ready, and then you get up for work. Same scenario, same amount of sleep, and it's like, golly, I'm really tired. I don't have any motivation. Oh, yeah, because I'm just going to go talk about it.
When I know I'm going fishing, I wake up every hour. Every hour. It's almost like clockwork.
Fish on the brain.
And I know, the coffee's already, all I got to do is push the button, wrap up the rods, put the kayak in the truck, and I know it. But it's so funny. I wake up and I'm oh, man, 6:30. Oh, no, 6:30. Carl's already there. Let me have a cup of coffee, and I'll get there. It's so funny. It's like a completely different metabolism. When I know I'm going fishing, I'm doing 80 with the brakes on.
I'm out of there, buddy. That's for sure. So it was definitely a different last couple days with the cooler temperatures in the morning, for sure. I haven't really talked much about the beach yet. I had a good number of folks catching snook on the beach already this week. Might hinder that a little bit tomorrow morning, being 59 degrees. I would probably give it a little while, let it warm up a little bit. But that little Yozuri crystal minnow, man, has been really, really doing the trick. And that's, you know, it's funny. I you order all these plugs and all this stuff, and every, a lot of what I order is back like in October, and you're trying to anticipate what's going to go. And about the time, you know, I start looking at all the Yozuris and say, man, I haven't, these things have been sitting forever. I'm dusting them off. And then all of a sudden, here's the switch, and that's all that's going out the door. It's when the beach fishing starts picking up.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just an awesome bait to throw in that trough. It's a suspending bait. Some of them are floater divers. You have from ranging 2-inch baits up to, you know, 10 and 12 inch baits. So every profile they have covered. And you know, that's a big thing this time of year, whether you're fishing the beach or the river with the influx of the bait that we're seeing. You need them. We talk about it, and we haven't talked about it for a while. Match the hatch.
Match
you know,
the
if
hatch.
If you're an artificial fan, or even a live bait fan, you know, you've got to find what they're eating in a particular area. But, as an artificial guy, you have the ability to really, you know, hone down exactly what they're eating and have the ability to have it on hand and throw it. You know, if you get a bunch of fish eating on glass minnows, chances are you're not going to live bait a glass minnow. You need to either have a spinning rod or a fly rod is great this time of year too. But I just had a guy in this evening was using those little Gulfstream flash minnow jigs, which is a basically a glass minnow lookalike. They use them a lot for mackerel. We talk a lot about that in the mackerel season, first 3 months out of the year. But said we caught our first snook on a small live bait. We got him to the boat. He coughed up a bucket full of glass minnows. He said, I happen to have a couple of these jigs, and I throw these for mackerel. He said 32-inch fish on the first throw with it, you know, so just matching what he saw they were eating and had great success. Now, if you came into the store and you said, what do I need for snook? One of the last things I would probably go to is that little, you know, mackerel jig for, you know, what we sell it for. But you never know. You get out there and they're eating tiny baits, you need to go to a smaller profile. Or if you get out there and you see nothing but big mullet, you know, when we get to like October or I'm at, you know, depending on when the mullets start to come through, it's all topwater baits. You know, it's all bigger profile. It's all bigger bomber plugs. So you start to figure out what time of year, what bait really starts to move out of the store. And right now it's Yozuris, man. That's, you know, even in the river with all these little, the little glass minnows and the small little white baits, they make a pins minnow that's just a beautiful little profile bait, and it's got enough weight to it to where you can throw it with a spinning rod. You know, a lot of times you get to where, man, you get a really small bait. The best way to do it is with a fly rod, but you got some baits in those Yozuris, and like I was saying, some of those little jigs to where you can still throw them with a light spinning outfit. Now, you're not going to go do it with your 5,000 series spinning reel, you know, 2,500 or 3,000, and that way you can mimic those small baits that everything's eating on. And you know, you can have everything from little jacks to 200-pound tarpon chasing a school of baits that are no longer than an inch.
The biggest tarpon I've ever hooked, I hooked on a little mirror lure. Mm-hmm. Freddie taught me about those mirror lures, and I'm going to pass it on. The cast and retrieve works great with topwaters. It works great with Yozuris. But those mirror lures, Freddie really taught me what to do. Cast it out. Don't do anything. Reel a couple of reels. Stop. Reel a couple of reels. Stop. And I've been doing pretty good with those mirror lures, of course. But I like spoons, and that's the other thing. And we have spoons, but those little Johnsons, the ones that are supposed to be, this is the premier redfish bait, I got news for you. Snook and tarpon, slam them. And there are still some, and I don't know if Freddie told me this one time, but there's still some resident bluefish around.
Yeah,
not
and
as many as there were.
That's what I tell a lot of people, too. You know, if you're you know, not really an avid beach angler or whatnot, you know, which for the tackle shop guy, it's good. But you got these guys that gear up with, you know, light fluorocarbon leader, and, you know, you've got your Yozuri plug on a piece of 25-pound, and, you know, you're going to the beach, and you toss that thing in there, and you see a couple snook in the trough, and you get it close, and a bluefish comes up and eats your entire bait and everything, and it's gone. There goes your $14 plug. And you're going, are you kidding me? I didn't want to catch that, even if he did get hooked. So that's what I like, you know, in this little bit of a transition portion of the season where there's still a few bluefish and mackerel around, but the snook are starting to show up in the big jacks. My first thing that comes to mind to throw isn't a soft plastic bait. It's not a DOA bait buster, just because you could throw it 15 times and never have a problem. You could throw it once and it be bitten in half. So the hard baits and the spoons really will eliminate you donating a lot of money to the bluefish and the mackerel, because, you know, they're just so quick that, you know, when you're trying to finesse a bait for a snook, you're constantly stopping. The chances of them getting up in front of the bait are very good, and that's when they get up on that 30-pound mono, 20-pound mono, or fluorocarbon, whatever you're... And, I mean, a 2-pound bluefish can cut through 40-pound mono with no problem.
In a heartbeat.
So, yeah, the teeth aren't any less sharp in a small bluefish than they are in a big bluefish. So keep that in mind when you're going out there. I wouldn't really be taking my storm baits. Take something that's got a hard side to it, or like we're saying, a spoon, and go take a walk on the beach in the morning. I don't think you need to be real early tomorrow. If you're looking for the last little stretch of pompano, by all means, get out there, get the long rods out. That is kind of fading off, but I'll tell you, if there's one morning to get that little tail end of a good run of pompano, it'd be tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
You know, and your 12-foot rods, put some baits out deep, and then certainly fish that trough. You know, we see people all the time come in, and they just think beach, you got to have those 12 and 13 and 15-foot rods. Well, that season's coming to an end. You know, you get to the point where now mostly everything is 15-foot, you know. Right in that first trough. So you don't need that length. 8-foot max. You can take some of your inshore stuff you've been fishing with for the last 3-4 months, take it right out to the beach, and be just as successful and equipped for it, too. So,
just like I mentioned earlier, though, we do have spring tides, and we got a nice big fat tide early tomorrow morning. Probably where we are, probably a 9:30, 10 o'clock top. But it's going to be high enough that when it starts running out, it's going to run out good. And that's when those waves make those pockets. And if you have never lived and seen a 35 or 40-inch snook swimming right along in that wave pocket,
You haven't lived. I also wanted to mention real quick, Frank, you guys, I heard you at the end of the last show talking about FOS, Florida Oceanographic. If you guys have never gone out and done that, that whole tour of that facility, really, you're missing out. Check that out. I was lucky enough to be able to do an oyster project with them last weekend. We set up a few oyster beds north and south of the Stewart Causeway. Great program. A good friend of mine, Brittany, over there, oversees all of it. She takes care of all the cobia, the turtles. I mean, really more than a full-time job. So great folks over there that do that. And if you got kids this weekend, or mom you want to take somewhere, Florida Oceanographic is a great little spot.
I had my 5-year-old granddaughter down here, and when they asked her what was the favorite thing, she said, "Watching the fishes eat."
Yep, that's it, buddy. So something to do for Mother's Day, something to take the kids to. Definitely a great idea, Frank. I know you're going to head over there tomorrow, so good stuff. And you might go do a little fishing tomorrow. I would maybe sleep in a little bit. Probably bring a sweater on your way out.
Yeah, Freddie gets to sleep in on Wednesdays, no other day.
That's it.
Another week gone by.
That's it. Everybody, thank you for tuning in. As always, without the listeners, there's no reason for us to be here. So thank you, guys. Frank, thank you. Dominic.
Yep.
We'll do it again in a week.
Next
Everybody,
week.
Everybody, have a great weekend. Go catch a fish.